in 2014, we had some big issues on vegetable prices. And so one of our employees said, you know, let's just buy a truck and go buy the vegetables ourselves. And me and him, you know, we did the puja for the truck. We took it to a temple. And then, you know, me and him would go twice a week to the market and like in cash, we would buy all these vegetables. We were paying salaries in cash back then too.
Welcome to episode 5, season 1 of Millionaire Mondays, the show where we bring you the stories of real Indian startups told by the entrepreneurs that built them. I'm Caleb Friesen, and on the show today, how an American entrepreneur started a company in India selling Mexican fast food called California Burrito. Today, California Burrito is a profitable business, generating upwards of 100 crore rupees in revenue every single year. But the interesting thing is that its founder, Bert Mueller, actually never planned on becoming an entrepreneur. Before coming to India, he was planning on becoming a movie soundtrack composer, having worked on a number of film scores since 2008. But during his stay in Jaipur in 2010, he discovered a business opportunity that he simply couldn't pass up. See, one of Bert's fellow students in the study abroad program was actually a big fan of Mexican food, and they would actually cook Mexican food for people in Jaipur, and this food got a tremendous response. Bert realized that Mexican flavors were very compatible with the Indian palate, and yet there were very few Mexican restaurants in the country. India had plenty of pizza, burgers, and fried chicken, but almost no burritos, and so he returned to the United States to start researching how he could build a business in India.
When I came back, I felt my eyes had been opened.
Oh, wow.
You know, things were just, it's very different living here. And you see things that, then the U.S. looks very different to you. So I think I just came to the conclusion as soon as I got back, I was probably running one day, you know, jogging, and just thought, you know, I think, you know, what would I do in the next 10 years of my life? And, you know, where would I learn the most? And I was like, I learned a lot in India. Maybe if I start a business in India, I'd probably learn even more. Wow. Of course, India is fast growing. The U.S. was in a recession at that time. So you think maybe also it could be a good, you know, financial idea.
Interesting.
And then started thinking about business ideas, but always I was in love with the kind of Mexican food and especially the format. So Chipotle obviously is the gold standard in that. And then Qdoba, Moe's, there's a few others as well.
You actually went and worked at Moe's, right?
When
you came back to the U.S.
So once I decided that I wanted to do this, I committed to it. I think it was probably in September of 2010. You know, just after the new year was starting, I just enrolled in a business school class and got a job at Moe's to see if I liked it or not. I'd worked in food service earlier, so I knew food, but then just took a kind of a part-time job at Moe's.
Doing what?
Frying chips, serving on the line.
Okay.
It's kind of also a very different socioeconomic class of people who were working there. So that was also a kind of interesting experience.
Yeah. Most college graduates don't end up going and working.
I think I was the only one.
Yeah, in QSR. Yeah.
But made friends with a few of them. You know, there were some people who'd been in prison. You know, it's not obviously the choice job for a lot of people, but good people working there. And that kind of got me hooked. I think just seeing customers, interacting with customers. And I love the food and the format, so.
Was it also while you were back there in the United States that you connected with your co-founders and pitched them this idea of maybe starting a company in India?
Yeah. So I think once I got back, I started speaking with Galen about it. And he was a fan of it as well, although he was at that time acting. So he had an acting career. And he had just shot some big movie called Band Slam, I think a year or two earlier. And so he still had acting gigs he was getting. So he was, you know, while interested in it, I think ultimately had other things he was doing. So even when we started, he was not here for, I think, the first 6 or 8 months.
Oh, really?
And then came after that.
Okay. And then your other co-founder, is he Indo-American?
He's not. His name is Indian. His name is Dhurram. His parents had converted to Sikhism in the 60s, but not Indian at all.
Help me to understand, you and your two co-founders are all coming from the United States for the first time. I guess you get your own respective apartments. You're figuring out life here when you start the company. How were you able to finance the business in the early days? Was it just money out of your own pockets?
Some. So we originally each put in, I think, $15,000. And then our parents each probably put in $15,000, $20,000. And then what we did is when we came here, we started a Tumblr. So every day or two, we would post whatever we were doing. And we had pitched some people before we came to India about this business. And people were, I think, appropriately skeptical. 22-year-olds in a country they don't know doing a business they don't know, you know, probably should be. But the, you know, I think the Tumblr convinced people that we at least were doing the right approach, developing tortillas, working on kitchen equipment, looking for real estate. And I think that kind of convinced some people who were on the fence. So I think we raised about $250,000 to do the first two stores, which was more than enough for that.
That was like a triple F round, family, friends.
And, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and fools. Yeah. But clearly not, because the business actually ended up.
They've done pretty well.
Yeah. And then in terms of just getting a restaurant up and running, as you mentioned, kitchen equipment, you have to think about staffing, who are these employees that we're going to be hiring in this location, figuring out the menu, the ingredients, supply chain. Like, how long did that take? And what was the experience? You even said, like, one of your co-founders, Galen, didn't come for 6 months. So, like, was it basically just you and your other co-founder on the ground?
It was me and Dunham, and we had hired an ops person, kind of an ops manager at that point in time. We did some catering to get our feet wet. We catered for Zynga. We had made a friend with a guy at brunch who was the head of Zynga India, so we catered for them. We catered for, I think, one of these German multinationals. And so that got – we hired a chef, actually, who came in from the U.S., also from California. So it was a lot of R&D happening. But mainly, I think what kind of kept us a little slow, it took 10 months to 11 months to get the first store opened, was just real estate. You know, restaurants run on real estate in a big sense.
Yeah. So setting up that first location in Embassy Golf Links Tech Park, that's a pretty desirable place to...
Great property.
Yeah. Yeah. But it must have been like, you guys are brand new, right? Yeah. They've never heard of you. You know, I don't even know if you had a website at that point,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Probably not.
You've got a Tumblr. Hey guys, take a look at our Tumblr, right? Not that convincing.
Yeah.
Was it difficult to secure that first location, and how did you go about it?
We paid too high a rent. That's effectively what we did. But we were looking at Orion Mall where a deal fell through. We had gotten close to signing a deal, but they were skeptical. So did not sign that.
Are you happy that you didn't end up going that route and chose Tech
Honestly,
Parks?
Honestly, I think that would have also worked.
Okay.
But the property we got was better. So I think would have put us on a path of success, but the one we got was definitely better.
Why didn't you look at Jaipur? Like, you had experience there. You'd been there. You're familiar with the people there. Why not start your first location there?
I think... a couple of things. We actually came in March of 2011 to do an R&D trip. So we'd written a business plan and, you know, really Bangalore and Gurgaon looked like the two best places for multiple reasons. So visited both of those. Bangalore was just the clear winner, which we thought. And then after we were here for 2 weeks in December, we were like, Bangalore is the place. But Taco Bell had opened in 2010. They opened in Bangalore. So also the presumption was that Yum had been in the market for a long time. They probably knew a bit about what to do. Bangalore was clearly the winner. You know, real estate was cheaper. There were more tech parks here. So the, you know, better real estate from kind of a safety perspective, people who've traveled abroad.
Got it. You were also, if Taco Bell was already in the country, then you're kind of, you must be looking at how can we position ourselves in a way that is... we're able to compete with them, right? Especially as a small company without the kind of backing that they have as this massive global QSR.
I think at that point in time, not much actually. I would say post 2019, yes. You know, then they were bigger, we were bigger. Then the market was bigger as well. Back then, I think they had a very different property strategy than us. They were taking malls and standalones. We were doing tech parks. We were paying attention to what was working for them and what was not working for them, but we were not actively trying to maybe peel customers off from them.
Got it. But that's helpful to be able to look at them and say like, oh yeah, that was a mistake that we can probably avoid.
Yeah, I remember they did some kind of Indian-inspired campaigns. They did a Katito, which was a Kati burrito. They did some odd things that clearly were not resonating with people. Went very heavy on mayo in the food. I probably shouldn't say negative things about Taco Bell, right? But yeah, paid attention. I mean, and then I think they kind of course corrected in 2017 or
2016. No, I think they're doing a great job now. Yeah. I mean, I love their locations specifically, like the just the layout of the
absolutely
Okay, so then you know you're probably learning a little bit from them, but really this is sort of no man's land, right? This is unknown territory for you guys. How do you go about bringing something to the Indian market that people aren't really that familiar with? Burritos, like I don't think. I mean, I still hear people to this day, like one of the podcasts that you did in the past, like it's even the pronunciation, like burrito, right? And we say burrito. So how did you go about it? I mean, how did you make this first push into the Indian market?
So I think our first location was just opposite Goldman Sachs head office. And they had lots of people who were well aware of the format. So they educated the people who worked there. So I think it was path of least resistance. We didn't want to have to figure out how to market it.
Right.
Over time, I think it was really word of mouth. We never did marketing. Mistake. We should have done marketing. But word of mouth did enough. And so I think we really didn't start marketing until after COVID.
Did you find that the reception when you opened your first location was positive? Did people?
It was insane, actually. I mean, I was checking our numbers before I came here. We did fantastic numbers our first 3 months. You know, I think even now we did like 150 bills in an hour there, which is like probably 200 people we served in an hour, which we've broken subsequently, but that wasn't broken for a long time, you know, after that. So there was, I mean, people were excited that that we'd opened. You know, we did our best as we could at that point in time in terms of supply chain. And hopefully, you know, we keep getting better at it. But yeah, it honestly did well from day one.
Yeah.
I was working on the serving line. I think Galen was working there. Yeah, very busy.
You're working on the serving line.
I think I worked on the serving line for about the first 6 months.
Wow.
So
what was that like? I'm sure a lot of people were just like super confused. Like that's sort of a menial job, right?
Yeah.
They're just seeing this foreigner doing this job. That would have been more interesting than the food, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was part of the marketing. You know, that definitely piqued people's interest. But over time, I think the food was pretty good. We were pretty fast. Prices were good. So it did well.
Financially as well?
Financially as well. Second store did well. As we did I remember I'd met the head of Krispy Kreme Asia. The Krispy Kreme had just opened on Church Street. So I'd met the head of Krispy Kreme Asia, and I took him to our store, and he said, you know, just duplicate this or replicate this at least 5 or 10 times and then do a different type of property. So we listened to him for the next store, but then ignored him for the third store. But then the 5th, 6th, 7th store, we listened to him.
All tech parks.
Yeah, effectively.
Okay. And all in Bengaluru.
Yeah. We did one standalone in Koramangala, which was a big investment, started badly. That one eventually picked up, but it took probably 6 months or 5 months to break even, which is a new experience. We were generally used to making money in a first month or second month.
You were able to recoup your investment?
No, not recoup, but start turning cash.
Got it.
Which Koramangala was definitely a loss maker for at least 6 months.
Okay. But overall, it seems like those first 5-6 locations generally across the board, everything was going well. Your business was successful by all accounts.
Mostly well. I think, you know, barring, yeah, mostly well.
And what do people think back home? You're still updating the Tumblr at this point?
I think, so after we'd opened our third store, we thought, let's raise more money and do more stores. So I think we went out and raised about $750,000.
Yeah. From an individual, right? An angel investor.
Advit invested a good amount of that. Maybe half of that.
Okay.
They did maybe half of that. The rest came from kind of the same people.
And what did those funds enable you to do?
That took us through to 2016. It probably took us to 15 restaurants or, yeah, maybe 15 or 16 restaurants.
So basically investing mainly in expanding your footprint across the city.
Yeah.
Okay. Not so much into the marketing, as you said.
No, nothing in marketing, unfortunately.
That's really surprising. Do you kind of regret going looking back that you didn't make a more significant
100%
push? 100%. Okay.
Mistake. Hmm. You know, we should have been smarter about marketing. We should have been smarter about probably investing in the brand.
Yeah.
I think we had worked with some agencies at the beginning and we're not happy with the output. Maybe Bangalore wasn't that mature at that stage in marketing. But should have done that by 2015, 2016, people were doing some good stuff. I think that would have definitely propelled us in a better way.
I think the first location that I saw was your location in Kormungla. I'm not sure what road it's on, kind of nearby Black Pearl. That was the location that you opened?
That was the first one. And we wound up selling that. It was too big of a property.
Yeah.
Big rent. We sold it to Leon Grill. They moved in.
Okay.
And then we shifted right around the block.
Right around the block. Okay, I think that's the one that I've...
It's a smaller one now.
Yeah. There's next
too
to a
small, but...
Next to a cafe, I think.
Yeah, a grocery store, yeah.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that. I remember looking at the logo and California Burrito. Like, what? This is kind of weird. Like, you know, and eventually I think I ended up ordering my first burrito bowl. Was like Iberangar during one of these podcasts that I was doing after the podcast. Me and the guest went... And yeah, it was a positive experience. And I just remember, like, how have I not heard about this company before? Like, the logo is sort of iconic, eye-catching, the three stars. Was that you? Did you come up with the branding and the logo?
I designed the logo.
Okay.
You know, maybe you should hire professionals.
No, it stood out to me.
Yeah.
The name, too, was that you or you and your co-founders kind of discussed that?
I would say that was me.
Okay.
Yeah. We had discussed a lot of names, and then one day, I think... Yeah, it was clear. We tried showing these to people on the street, the brand logos, and it just seemed obvious that, one, the format's from California. Two, the chef we'd hired was from California, and people like California. So it's a little basic, but ultimately it's, you know, people don't know about it. So let's be a little obvious.
Yeah. No, it's the most well-known, I think the most well-known American state.
Probably, yeah.
Everybody over here is, especially in Bengaluru, right?
Yeah.
California is kind of the number one place for startup founders to kind of relocate to if they're going to the US. Were there any other names that you guys played around with?
A bunch.
What were some of those?
Won't say.
Okay.
We did logos. They were, you know, looking back, good, right decisions were made on that.
Okay. So you raise this $750,000 in 2013.
Yeah.
Really exciting, right? Probably a little bit of stress as well, pressure, like, okay, now we really have to go after this.
Yeah.
And the way that you guys were expanding is kind of interesting. And I would say maybe it's typical in India, I'm not sure, but definitely in the United States, going the company-owned location route mm-hmm. is less common than taking the franchising approach.
Yeah.
Why did you guys decide to do it that way instead of going with the franchising approach?
So we did two franchises back then. And
one of the first like five or six locations?
Yeah, so our fourth location was a franchise.
Oh.
They invested, we ran the show. I think there was apprehension from my side on control. Maybe once you reach a scale, you have the system or you have the, you know,
the SOP.
Kind of, you have the infrastructure to support and, you know, support a franchise. And also I had not seen anyone do that successfully. You know, Subway had done it, and I think to their detriment, which they're now reversing. You know, generally a franchise business, you need a mechanism to enforce, and India is not famous for its robust and quick legal system, which to me would be necessary to do a good franchising operation.
Would you say that that's one of the reasons why franchising in the United States has been more successful?
Because
you can sue people like super
Absolutely.
Easily?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Whereas here, I think consequences. Here,
it's more about muscle.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just...
you have to know people.
Different strategy.
Yes. So. Very diplomatic of you. But that makes a lot of sense.
You know, I think now actually I see a few people franchising and it might go well. I remember Coventors had done a big franchise expansion. It was kind of a disaster. And I remember meeting someone from their senior team and he said his whole job was getting rid of franchisees, basically consolidating because it was too tough. People would change the milk, but you know, not fun to.
No, I heard about that actually. Yeah, it was quality control is a challenge.
Problem, especially, you know, it might be easier for us because we have control on certain ingredients. But even then, I just wouldn't do it now. You know, if we can generate enough cash to open stores pretty quickly, first off, why bother? But then do you really want, if you're not going to let a franchisee run the store, which Subway does, you know, they let their franchisees run the stores. I wouldn't do that. You know, then why bother having 50 investors when you just have like two? Because if a franchisee goes wrong, also, you know, that might be a lot of money for them.
Yeah.
So who wants to be in trouble for that?
Totally. But I think the flip side here is that as you're expanding in this company-owned format, it's very easy to kind of spread yourself too thin, right? Because you have to have sort of oversight over all of these different locations. Has that been a challenge? And especially in the early days while you were expanding, was it stressful? Did you feel anxious about sort of continuing to expand with this company-owned approach?
Not really. I think we never really gave a lot of thought to franchising. We thought about it and then thought that's a bad idea. Probably our investor wanted us to do that because, you know, cash, less dilution. But I think expanding, every time you double your size, things have to change kind of from an operation and management perspective. So Mas Kalander had expanded a lot back then. So I got some advice from Gaurav, who was running Mas Kalander. And I think he gave me some good food for thought on that. So probably we had a little bit of a rough patch in management, I would say maybe 2014, 2015, where we could have done a better job. And that's where we had opened quite a few stores in that period of time. But things did settle down. And I think now we have a much better handle on what infrastructure is required to do the next doubling of, you know, store count.
Yeah. And you said too there that 2014, 2015 was a bit of a challenging time period.
Yeah.
How much of that had to do with your co-founder kind of going back? Galen got a gig, I guess, a TV show or a movie, and had to move back to the United States. Did that make things more difficult for you and Dudham?
I don't think, not really. It was just the store counts had increased. Galen got married, so he went back and got married and had other things he wanted to do. So I think India never suited him very well. Especially from a food perspective.
Couldn't handle the hot food.
Not a spicy guy.
That's so funny. Do you have spicy food at California Burrito?
Actually, our new salsa that we just made is much spicier. So I like spice.
Every time I meet people in QSR, I always tell them, like, you need to up the spice here.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be so hot that, like, there's an option for Indians who think that they're tough, but then they find out that they're not.
Absolutely. Andhra style.
Yes, exactly. So tell me about that time period, 2014, 2015, you went from, what was it, six?
We probably went to about 6 to 12 stores.
Yeah. So as you said, like that doubling.
Yes.
What were the lessons that you learned during that time period about expansion?
I think probably should have hired some more senior people in certain positions. I think also we had diversified the type of stores and maybe gotten a few properties that were too small. I think just teething and not having enough bandwidth.
Nothing sort of nearly fatal, though.
It was no, just, not fatal.
Just small challenges along the way.
I think, you know, yeah, small challenges along the way. I mean, sales, it wasn't like sales were going down. They were going up, but probably it could have gone up a lot more if we'd done a better job.
Yeah. So just help me to understand at this point in the journey, what does the business look like? You open a location, that's an initial investment, mm-hmm. right? You set up all the sort of location infrastructure, the people, the inventory, the kitchen stuff that's expensive. You know, and then you're selling these burritos, which are, you know, they're just a small little piece of food, right? This is how it is in QSR, like the margins are kind of thin. So just help me to understand financially, how is the business functioning on a location by location basis?
You know, I remember in 2014, we had some big issues on vegetable prices. And so one of our employees said, you know, let's just buy a truck and go buy the vegetables ourselves. So we did that. And me and him, you know, we did the puja for the truck. We took it to a temple. And then, you know, me and him would go twice a week to the market and, like, in cash, we would buy all these vegetables. We were paying salaries in cash back then, too. But, you know, things got more professionalized. But I think that that experience of, you know, taking it upon ourselves to go out and do procurement made us think about a lot of the prices we were paying for things. And I think that almost it brought this ethos into the company that, you know, if we're not able to get what we want at the price we want, maybe we just do it ourselves. So, you know, one of the things in the future that we were thinking about was avocados, because, you know, I keep going back to Mexico and you have the food there. You go, wow, this is really good. You know, Mexicans are amazing at Mexican food.
Go figure.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
And then you go, wow, it's not quite as good here. So what, you know, what's missing? And it always came back to ingredients. So I think the first thing we did was we had gone to some banana growers association, which was run by the coffee guys for reasons unknown. I guess they have different crops.
Is this what, like Korg, Uti?
This is in Dindigul.
Dindigul, okay.
Yeah.
Where is that?
That's in Tamil Nadu.
Tamil Nadu, okay.
Yeah, so Dindigul Talapakati is from, the restaurant chain Dindigul Talapakati is from Dindigul.
Oh, okay.
I've been to their original restaurant a few times.
So they're growing coffee, they're also growing bananas.
And then they're trying to promote other, not cash crops, but hopefully profitable things to create shade or whatever. So avocados were getting promoted, so we had gone there to see if anyone was actually interested in growing avocados for us.
And specifically Haas avocados, right?
Specifically Haas. So then we wound up, you know, meeting a few contacts there and started pursuing importing these trees from the U.S.
That must have been a challenge.
Yeah, big challenge. Not easy getting trees inside.
Yeah. Did you have to get some kind of permits to or approval even that, hey, is this crop going to be invasive or like?
Yeah, those are the concerns people have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Complicated. But yeah, it took about 8 months and then the trees came in and then we got them planted. Actually, it wound up working with Namdaris on that, the supermarket chain. They're
nice.
They actually have a huge agriculture business.
They don't carry guacamole, do they?
They do have avocados.
They do?
Yeah, it might be some from our trees.
I haven't seen it, but I'll keep my eyes open.
So we partnered with them on that. And the trees are fruiting beautifully. I just got pictures the other day.
Wow.
So I think this is like the first year we got fruits from the trees.
Oh, congratulations. It
took like 4 years.
That's a long time span. But yeah, trees take a long time to grow.
They do. And then we've started growing other ingredients now from a... like tomatillos we're doing, which is in the salsa, and beans we're launching in September that we've grown, blackened pinto beans, and then chilies we're doing, working on romaine now.
Is that part of the long-term plan is to have like California burrito be self-sufficient in terms of the ingredients that it uses in its food?
I think key ones where either the market doesn't have the ingredient or we don't like the quality. Tomatoes taste different in Mexico than they do in India, as do onions.
Yeah.
I think Mexicans invented tomatoes, basically. So Mexicans have this incredible culture of horticulture, you know, corn and tomatoes. But those are not ones where you can't get a decent option. But you can't buy tomatillos and could not buy Haas avocados. Now you can't. Or imported ones you can get, but you can't get local ones. And the prices are crazy. So I think the view is that if it makes a difference in the taste and it makes it kind of more real in terms of Mexican, then we do it. Romaine is just, I'm not happy with romaine quality. So now we're working on that as a, where do you get good romaine?
The other thing that I've found is that there's not a lot of good nachos in this country.
Chips.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Corn definitely is.
Tortilla chips.
Corn could be a good project.
Yeah, so it's always disappointing. I always order nachos at like pretty much every restaurant that I go. I'm like crossing my fingers, like hopefully this time it's good. No, it's Doritos.
Yeah, that they all do that.
It's so disappointing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I need like Que Pasa to be here.
Yeah,
that Kirkland brand.
Well, you know, Taco Bell was importing from China in the beginning.
Oh, wow.
It's insanely expensive. We also looked at it. It was insane. From Mission. Mission is a big producer of that. But just insanely expensive.
Hmm. So this seems to be a theme, though, running through the story, which is the value and importance of control in QSR. That instead of going the franchising route, you took the company-owned approach because you want to be in control of these locations. You want to be able to ensure quality, and you want to have oversight over every aspect of the business. But again, as you're going from 5 to 12 to, you know, on and on and on, before the pandemic, I think, what, how many locations did you guys have?
We had 37 stores before the pandemic.
Yeah, 37 stores. That's a huge number, right?
Yeah.
Managing all of those locations, having oversight would have been, I would imagine it would have been challenging, right?
I think that, you know, in a way, two things helped us. Number one, we have a great team and we have a lot of people who've been in the system for a long time. Number two, the Swiggy and Zomato have, while delivery is obviously an important channel and they take a lot of margin, they also provide a lot of data. And I think that data has helped us run our operations better. Lot of things can be done with the ratings, the prep time, looking at an hour a day, you know, product. So I think that kind of getting a holistic view from the data has helped us control things.
That's really interesting that you're sort of using Swiggy and Zomato to collect data during that. Was it like basically 2014, 2018, 2019? That's a big part of how you're able to like have.
I would say from 2019.
2019 yeah. is when you started to really leverage
that. Then we
were
really using that.
Interesting. Yeah. What about like offline? Like people come into the restaurant and they just want to order something in person.
Yeah.
Was there a data gap there?
I think that the data that we get in delivery kind of correlates with dine-in.
Got it.
So if a store is doing badly on those metrics, they're not usually doing well on dine-in metrics. Dine-in, there's less data. So you get ratings from Google and Zomato or whatever. We have our own feedback system as well. But you don't get kind of as rich a view. That's what I would say.
And a lot of restaurants are in this same position. Collecting rich data from dine-in customers can be a real challenge. And for a lot of restaurants, they use in-house solutions, which might work in the early days with a single location restaurant. But when you're running a multi-city chain of restaurants like Burt, you're going to want to have a bulletproof way of collecting and making use of data, which is where this video sponsor, Explorex, comes into the picture. Their flagship platform, Bridge, is an operating system for your entire restaurant business. It doesn't matter how many locations you have, Bridge makes it easy for you to manage it all. The data that Bridge provides you with will enable you to make informed decisions on the direction in which your restaurant business needs to grow. And by the way, this is literally all happening from your smartphone. Explorex has a proven track record, having worked with more than 1,000 restaurants across 15 cities in India, which is why they're so confident in their ability to improve your bottom line efficiency and also increase your restaurant's productivity and revenue. To learn more about Explorex and their operating system for restaurants, click on the link in the description down below. And now let's get back to the podcast. So 2014 until the financial year of 2018 was a pretty exciting time for you guys. You had a couple of bumps along the way, but really it was a growth story for you guys up until essentially the pandemic,
yeah.
Right? You were able to go from 7 crore rupees to 21 crore rupees in revenue. And then you also were actually a loss-making company back in 2014, but by the end of the financial year of 2018, you were seeing a profit of, I think it was like 96 lakh rupees,
probably about
roughly.
A crore, yeah.
Yeah, about a crore in profit,
yeah.
Which is pretty incredible. It's you and your one co-founder now. And then the pandemic hits, which obviously for restaurants across the country and across the world was a very challenging time. I think at that point you had like quite a bit of your business was coming from deliveries, though. You were mentioning Swiggy and Zomato, so... was that enough to kind of keep things afloat, or did you really still see like a pretty big dip in your revenue and struggling to kind of keep things afloat?
So I think that, you know, Feb 2020 was our best month ever.
Oh.
So we just crossed like 4 crore. So, you know, wow. I had gone to Korea actually in the end of Jan, and coronavirus, I think we were in a hotel that had coronavirus cases, like the first in Korea. So I started getting the sense things could go very bad. Clearly, you know, people in Korea were scared of this, and then came back to India. Obviously then in March, in the end of March, things really went south. So overnight we went from, you know, 4+ crore a month to 25 lakhs, because your delivery was probably 30% of our business at that point in time. But most of our stores were in, half of our stores were in tech parks, which immediately were dead.
Oh, right.
So,
and malls as well.
Yeah. Malls and tech parks were immediately dead. So all we had left were like the standalone stores. And I think, you know, the first 2 months we were kind of scratching our heads. What on earth are we going to do here? But then we figured a few things out and started spending on marketing, and gradually, you know, sales came back.
Did you have money in the bank at around the time that the pandemic hit?
We had just, you know, I think IJ, our investor, had just invested a crore right before. We had a little, yeah, we had probably 2 crore, 1.5 crore. We probably had 1.5 crore in the bank, which then we checked our notes and I was like, that'll last us not that long. So, you know, cash is king, right? So we raised a little money from our existing investors in May 2020, and then just really buttoned down.
Was that a hard thing to do, raising those funds? Because I think a lot of people were extremely bearish on your industry.
I think people understood that not only there was a unique growth opportunity, probably the valuation was compelling and things would not always be bad. Of course, they were taking a bet we would survive, but we had survived for, you know, 8 years in India already, so probably could figure this one out.
Yeah. Well, you sound like you were optimistic and, you know, I think you've always had that can-do attitude, right? Any challenge is overcomable.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. But your co-founder, I think he, I'm not sure if he had this.
That was planned. So he left in May 2020. That was pre-planned.
Even before the pandemic,
it was planned before the pandemic. We were kind of going to change the trajectory of the company. He had other things he wanted to do. We were actually planning to raise money. So I think that wasn't a pandemic related.
Understood. And he went to the United States and now he's running his own startup.
He went to business school and Kellogg, and now he's done. You know, he's doing his own startup.
Nice. So then you become a solopreneur in May of 2020.
Yeah.
After starting with two other people.
Yeah.
And you're an American in this foreign country. I can't imagine that it was like, were you okay just doing it on your own, or was it sort of like, did it become more lonely, or you have people around you like in the business that are?
I think it makes running the business actually easier. I think that you lose a friend. I mean, the friendship is very important. So not having a friend around is you miss that. But fundamentally, running the business is easier. It's not that it's so hard, but
no, it's like every big decision normally to be like, hey, what do you think
now?
About
I just decided. So,
and you've been doing this long enough now that your intuition is probably
my hunches are not terrible.
Yeah.
So
whereas when you started, it might have been like, I don't really know what I'm doing. This is a new market for me.
Probably 2018, start making good decisions.
Yeah.
So in a way that was easier, and we have a fantastic team. I couldn't do it without people who are great working with me.
Definitely.
So I think, you know, we all have a shared vision. We have kind of a shared work ethic. And that drives things.
Yeah, you were mentioning earlier too that it seems like people stick with you. Like your attrition is probably on the lower side.
I feel that definitely at the corporate level it is.
Yeah.
At the store level, it's probably lower than the market, but I wouldn't say it's, generally QSR has high attrition.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's not, you know, comparing to other industries, it'd be high. But for us, I think it's pretty decent.
At what point did you feel like your business had kind of recovered, or you were in the clear post the pandemic? Was that like sometime in 2021 after the second wave?
Yeah, I think it was probably 2021, maybe the second half of 2021. I think we had started making money again. And then I think by October or November, we had gotten back to sales numbers from pre-pandemic with much fewer stores.
Oh.
So stores still hadn't come back, but sale had come back.
Right.
So I think that's when we felt, you know, we're on a good path now.
Yeah. So things were working, as you said, like the month before the pandemic hit India, you were doing better than you ever had been.
Yeah.
4 crore in a month. Did you just pick up where you left off in terms of business strategy, or did the pandemic sort of open up this new opportunity to maybe change strategy?
I think it just made us think much more sharply about what we wanted to do. So I think, you know, one piece was the, you know, Mexican ingredient journey, which was never deviated on that. I think one thing that changed in the pandemic was you know, where do stores go? Where do you put them? And earlier we would just say, okay, a tech park's there, let's open. And now we said, well, actually we won't open unless there's 8 kilometers between the stores. So they have a good delivery radius. because the stores that, you know, one thing we noticed is that when we lost half of our stores, the stores that then started doing huge sales were just, there's a virtuous cycle because the food was better, the staff were better. There's a very virtuous cycle to doing more sales per store. So then the view is, you know, why would you even want to operate a store that does 12 lakhs? Like maybe, which was our average pre-pandemic, the store should do 30 lakhs or more. And then the store really is better as a unit. And so I think property strategy changed a lot. I think also we realized that if we wanted to get dine-in back, we needed more than kind of working professionals. And we noticed Taco Bell was selling a lot of tacos. We said, we're not selling any tacos. So we focused on taco as a product category.
Nice. So let them educate the market. And then
they did a great job educating.
And reap the benefits.
So that, you know, we worked on taco really for 2 years and probably, I don't know, 10x'd our sales of tacos. I think that was different on product. On delivery, we started spending money on marketing. We did start using discount as a lever, not too heavy, but there. And I think, you know, those things combined, there was kind of compounding that happened. And that was a very positive for the unit economics of the stores. Delivery is now about 60% of our business, you know, So dramatic shift in kind of the model.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it seems like at a certain point you realized, you know, we're stronger than ever here. Maybe it's time to expand outside of Bengaluru, right?
So we had opened in NCR in 2018.
Okay.
Then we had opened in Hyderabad in 2019. So we were already in two other cities. Delhi had been okay. It did not go kind of as dreamed to start with. Hyderabad was way outside expectations, really good. But in the pandemic, I think we cracked Delhi. People actually were ordering too many tacos in Delhi, I think because of Taco Bell. So then we had to kind of educate about rice and push rice bowls.
What is it about Hyderabad that made it such a good market for you guys?
I think people from Hyderabad have traveled to the U.S. a lot.
So
they really know the cuisine. They know the format. I think Delhi less. Maybe they've been to Europe, but they haven't really been to the U.S. as much.
And maybe rice culture in Hyderabad too. Biryani.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a rice culture. People like rice bowls everywhere. It's not because earlier people said that, the South, everyone likes rice, but the North, everyone eats roti. But at the end of the day, people like a good meal and it can be rice too.
And you guys are doing both, right? I mean,
yeah,
tortilla is kind of roti in a way,
yeah.
Like it's a flatbread. But then you expanded to a new city, which was Chennai. This is pretty recent.
Yeah, so we just opened in Chennai.
And it was like, I think it was the most successful location launch you've ever...
It was.
How did you make that happen? Was it just that people in Chennai were like aware of California Burrito waiting for it to enter their market, or was it something that you guys did?
I think it was maybe both. There were people definitely who knew us already there. The other thing is we did a reel with me inviting people to the store in Tamil. So people liked
that. You spoke Tamil?
I spoke Tamil in the video.
Do you remember any of the script?
Yeah. I speak a little Tamil. We have Tamil employees who are teaching me.
Okay.
About that.
Tell me something in Tamil.
Vanakkam nanbargale.
That sounds, it has that like that sing-song kind of tone, right?
Yeah.
I love the sound of Tamil.
I love Tamil as well. I've always had like this connection, I feel, with that. So somewhere that materialized, the store did fantastic.
The reel blew up.
Yeah, the reel did really well, which surprisingly, I think it's kind of different. Different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sort of sat in my seat for a little bit.
Yeah.
Being the foreign guy making content for Indians.
Yeah, right.
And then in 2022, you guys did 110 crore rupees in revenue. Was that your best year so far?
That was best. Now this year will be much better.
Okay. So now you have this pan-India presence. Do you think at any point you'll go outside of India? I'm always encouraging Indian founders, you're not Indian, but just Indian startups in general to think about expanding globally so that India has more brands outside of the country that people can sort of, you know, Indians who are traveling outside feel like proud that, hey, this is like an Indian company too.
Yeah. My view is probably not. I think that one, India is an incredibly huge market, a great market. I think two, the lessons that you learn doing business here may or may not be applicable to the other markets. And then I think also, you know, all the work we're doing on ingredients is very much for India. So for me, you know, if Domino's can open up, you know, 1,500 stores in India, maybe we can also be a large option for people here.
Yeah.
But not that that's not our end goal. I mean, ultimately, we just live to serve great food every day. But maybe one day it becomes larger.
So there's probably not in the near term a future where you can find a California burrito in California.
I think that probably very bad idea.
I think so too. There's probably enough burritos over there.
Yeah, I think that's pretty competitive.
Yeah. So in terms of your future plans, right? You're now, like I said, solopreneur. Are you still like, you just live in the California burrito life? Like you're enjoying it, you want to keep going? Or is there a plan at some point in the future to maybe sell the company, an acquisition maybe, or like an IPO?
I think there's no plan in that sense. You know, we have a plan to hopefully get to about 100 stores by March 2025. And maybe we'll take stock at that point of what happens next. I think the beautiful thing is that, you know, things keep changing here. It's very dynamic. So, you know, every day I can see small improvements happening in our business and kind of just generally. So I'm very optimistic about, you know, where we'll be 2 years from now. You know, we flirted in the past with acquisition, but I think never really, I at least personally, I always felt that we were giving up too much. Like there's a genuine growth story here.
Especially here in Bengaluru, right? The Silicon Valley of India. There's a lot of startups that, at least up until very recently, were high burn, right? Yeah. That was part of the culture here, was just raise a bunch of money from investors, throw it into marketing, basically grow as fast as possible, but not really in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And you guys have also raised money from investors, but I think you've taken a very different approach where today in 2023, your business is profitable, right? And that's been something that's sort of been with the business. I'm not sure if, I guess, yeah, 20, around 20, was it 2018, 2017? Or was it even earlier that you guys sort of became profitable?
Most years we generated cash from the business.
Yeah.
I think only COVID and maybe 1 year in the early years, you know, genuinely there was a negative.
Yeah. So you guys have chosen not to sort of grow beyond your means, right? You always generate a profit first, grow the business sustainably, and then expand when it seems appropriate to do so.
Yeah, I would say that's the case. I don't feel that there's some huge land grab that has to occur where I need to go out and open 500 stores tomorrow. You know, only really malls is the place where it's tough. When someone else is in, then it's tough to get in, which is Taco Bell's strategy, it looks like. But I think maybe it's a contrarian approach. Maybe it's a conservative approach. We've just always felt that, you know, stores should generate a lot of money. And until they do, then don't go wild opening them. You know, now we're at a very healthy place. So I would get more aggressive now. You know, if we could open, you know, 3-4 stores a month from cash flow, that would be, you know, great.
Yeah. With the next milestone being what, 100 stores probably?
Yeah. I mean, we had raised some money to do that. Although now, I mean, I don't foresee us kind of needing to do that again. I mean, unless we want to go and open, you know, 10 stores a month, then we don't generate enough cash to do that. And I don't see that happening, you know, for a few years. But yeah, I think that that's always been our DNA, is make sure that, you know, things make money. Food is not a new business. There's no, you know, spin on tech or whatever that even would be, you know, entertain. I don't think should be entertained on, you know, people pitching our type of business, because it's kind of straightforward. So
make burritos, make people happy.
Yeah, right. That's the basics.
That was Burt Mueller, founder of California Burrito. And by the way, even though Burt today is a very successful solopreneur, there was a point in time when his daily driver was a Maruti Omni. Why did you used to drive an omnibus?
So we originally got that for transport in 2012 when we opened our first store and used it for catering. And then just always kept it. And
was that like your daily driver? Like that's how you would get around?
That's how I would get around. When I first came to India, in Bangalore especially, I was shocked at how I saw this guy, Ambarish, the actor. He's kind of the Clint Eastwood of Karnataka cinema. And he had just had his 60th birthday, and I was very impressed by his fan following. And I saw one of his movies. I checked out. I said, I like this guy. So then I had gotten his address from an auto driver and went to his house in JP Nagar. But anyways, kind of met him, took a photo with him, and just kind of liked him. So then I started putting his face on the car, which then also kind of was a fun thing. You know, people put the stickers on the vehicles. So he was kind of my kind of patron saint of the, you know, driving in Bangalore. You know, one funny thing that happened was Hari Bhartia, the head of Jubilant, had come down to meet us. You know, we were discussing certain things. And his car, his car got a flat tire. So then I drove him around in my Maruti Omni. So he's a billionaire guy. But that was fun. So I think that, you know, that car saw many different moments of vegetables and billionaires.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to the podcast this week, and I'll catch you in the next one.